Part 18, Chapter 2. The big marine attack plane landed in the night near the branch mine. It was still deserted. The rain still came down. But there were quarreling sounds of animals over where the skirmish had been fought. The snarls and spits of angry leopards, the shattering barks of some other beast, the eerie, cackling laughter of yet another predator. They were fighting over the bodies of the dead. The flatbed with the flying platform and blast mortar was where it had been prepared, just inside the hangar door. There was no sign that the other flatbed had returned in retreat. It must still be following the convoy. Johnny looked through the deserted compound again. The lights were still on. The distant mine pumps still pounded away. Unless disturbed by some outside force, all such machinery would probably continue to run for decades. The planetary traffic printer was still sitting there spewing out paper that recorded current traffic. Johnny glanced through it.
McIver, can you please bring extra fuel to Moscow? This is the traffic controller at Johannesburg. Are there any planes en route this way? If not, I can close down for the night. Isaac, please come in, Isaac. Listen, Isaac, were there any serviceable ore freighters left in the Grozny mine site? And can they be converted for passengers? Please let me know by morning. We're a wee bit shy of carriers right now. Lundy, we're canceling you on the Tibet run. We need you and your co-pilot back here to help with an airlift. Please acknowledge, laddie.
Most of it in the pilot jargon of Cyclo. It struck Johnny that this stream of messages would give an attacker a pretty good idea of what areas were actively operating. It was almost a catalog of targets for Mark 32s. If the convoy got through and these Cyclos mounted an overall attack, they could take back the planet. He wondered whether he shouldn't put out a general call on this set and order a 72-hour radio silence. But no, the damage was done. These same messages were probably reeling out of the Lake Victoria mine site printer, too. And any transmission he made here might be picked up by the convoy, alerting it. Well, he would just have to succeed with the attack on the convoy. That was all. He walked back through the empty, echoing levels. The Cyclos, he noticed, had mainly stripped the place of armament. They were leaving no blast guns or portable weapons behind to fall into Briganti hands. Lucky they'd overlooked the mortars in their haste. The flatbed was out of the hangar now, waiting in the dark yard. Johnny shut the doors of the compound. No use letting in the leopards and elephants and snakes. He went back to the big plane and did a rapid review of the actions that were about to occur. He told them to fly in very low indeed, hugging ground, from way over to the east and come in behind the ambush point. He didn't want that plane on convoy tank screens. Then, deploy along this ridge, this one here that flanked the road. And when the convoy was well into the ravine, give them a flanking fire. What if they turned around and started back? Well, he'd be back there with a mortar on the flying platform to keep them from retreating.
What?
An incredulous Robert the Fox was saying.
One mortar against tanks? That's impossible.
The convoy would be able to get back into the forest, and they'd never get them out. Oh, you want this plane to take off and help block that. Well, that's all right. It is a battle plane.